Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. We are now in October and the second title of our Sundial Book Club. And for this month, we chose Patricia Engel's 2016 novel, The Veins of the Ocean. It is the Dayton Literary Peace Prize winner, the New York Times Editor's Choice, and the International Latino Book Award finalist. It follows a young Colombian woman named Reina, who fights to protect her family from one horrific tragedy after another. She ends up alone in the Keys, trying to find a sense of home, always wondering if maybe it means going back to Colombia. But in the quiet solitude of island life, she meets a Cuban man who is also searching for home, which is in the arms of his children, still living in the communist island. It's a story about being in exile, both physically and emotionally. It's about imprisonment and isolation. It's about finding one's identity after tragedy. We recently spoke with Patricia Engel about her novel, and we should note, much of this book deals with issues surrounding familial murder, which some listeners may find uncomfortable. Patricia said the idea for the novel came from a strange conversation that she had once with her mother.
Almost 10 years ago, I was driving with my mother past a bridge, and she said to me out of nowhere, that bridge over there, a long time ago, a man threw a baby off of it. And she didn't know any of the details surrounding that event. She only knew that it happened. She didn't know what happened, if the baby lived or died, or what circumstances led up to it. So all I was left with was this image of a man throwing a child over a bridge. And I thought, oh my God. First, the shock of it, you know, it took some time to absorb. But then I started to wonder what could have led up to that moment, what could have pushed a man to do something like that, and what happened to all the people who were connected to that child and to that man. So at the time, I was working on another book, Vida, my first book, and then I even wrote another book, It's Not Love, It's Just Paris. And all the time, I had this image in the back of my mind, and I thought that I would return to it in a story or in a novel or somehow. So the first thing that I did in about 2009 was I wrote a short story called The Bridge, which was published by The Atlantic. And it's just the story of that family that and how that event was such a traumatic event and really shaped the family's history in huge ways. And that was published. And I wrote another novel. And for some reason, even though I write many short stories that stay as short stories, they don't turn into novels, that story, The Bridge, stayed with me in a way that other stories haven't. And I decided that I wanted to return to it in order to make it a novel.
And right off the bat, I mean, you take us to that bridge. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is where the novel starts. One of the themes that kind of kept going throughout the story is this idea that the sins of the parents are carried on through the children, because this bridge we keep coming back to. And yes, you have one father who tries to throw his child over the bridge. Later, you have another father who throws his child over the bridge. Go a little bit into detail about this idea of how children can carry, you know, that anger, the rage, the violence from their parents, from generation to generation, because this family seems like it's a long train of tragedy.
Yeah, one of the challenges of actually writing it, taking an image, a single image, and converting it into a story was to figure out who was going to tell this story, who would have the access to all the information of what actually happened before, during, and after. And I struggled for a while trying to decide if the baby, the surviving baby, should tell the story, you know, as an adult, or the man, you know, who actually committed the crime, or a witness, an innocent bystander. And I came up with the sister to the baby who was thrown over the bridge, and she's the one who's closest to them all. So she has the ability to not feel judgment. You know, she has empathy because she's connected to them by blood. But at the same time, she has all the information necessary to convey that to the reader.
And that's our protagonist,
yeah,
Reina.
Yeah, that's Reina. So she's the narrator of the story. But at the same time, she bears the burden of that crime, because the original crime was committed by her father, of course, against her brother when he was a baby. And then the crime was repeated by her brother doing the same to his girlfriend's child. And I wanted to explore that too, how trauma is often repeated, even when it goes against all our impulses to do so. And even more, I was interested in exploring how the families of the incarcerated deal with the fact that someone they have loved, a brother or a son has done something terrible, unforgivable. And that's a very specific kind of trauma, I think. It's one that's not imposed on them directly, but indirectly, but they suffer alongside the person who's, you know, living out their sentence in prison. They suffer with shame publicly. And so it's kind of a, what are those called? Those Russian nesting dolls of trauma, right? There's all sorts of trauma that Raina has assumed in her own life, personally, privately, in her childhood. But then there's trauma that she's inherited from her mother and her grandmother, even. But then there's also this kinds of, trauma that she has acquired as a result of her brother's actions.
So you've been describing Raina, because I wanted to know who she is, mm-hmm. and a little bit more about how you explain who Raina is, you know, to someone who hasn't read the book yet.
Raina, to me, is someone who is far more intelligent than she's given credit for, because she's what some people would consider undereducated, and no one has ever had high hopes for her.
And she spends her life doing what her mother did.
Yes, she paints nails. She's been underestimated and undervalued by basically everyone in her community, even in her own family. But she possesses an intelligence and a wisdom that she's not even aware of, because she hasn't been raised to value that about herself. She's a person who has endured a lot, suffered a lot, which has given her strength. But she's still in the process of understanding all that she needs to overcome. And in order to sort of live in the peace and happiness that she's entitled to.
You describe how at the beginning, how this idea really came from this story of somebody who, and this, by the way, this story is like, I looking up, I remember there was a man in Tampa.
Yes.
Some years back, 2015.
Case. Yes.
Threw his absolutely. 5-year-old daughter over the bridge. So this is a story that's happened.
You know, the funny thing is, once I wrote this, I thought it was such an out there situation, such an anomaly. But once I published the story, people started sending me news clippings. Apparently, this happens all the time.
Right.
It just happened in New York quite recently. Somebody threw a child off of, I think it was the George Washington Bridge, or off the Palisades cliffs. And it's really not that rare.
I know it is, because it was such a jolting moment, but it took a second afterward to think, wait a minute, this has actually happened. Mm-hmm. Is Raina or any of the characters in the story in any way based on people you know?
You know, in order to write any character in any story or book, they all have to become people that I know. They all have to become people that I know very intimately, and they all have to become parts of myself. The answer is yes and no. In order to kind of liberate them to have their own story and determine their own fates, I have to let them be who they are on the page and not dictate them based on people that I've known in real life. But the interest, of course, always comes from personal life. I've always been interested in how the families of the incarcerated deal with reconciling their love with their shame or their disapproval. A crime committed by someone they love that has deemed them unforgivable and even unfit for society. And in the case of Reina's brother, he's sentenced to death. You know, the judge has determined he does not deserve to live. And what do you do with that? What do you do with that love when you love someone who the society says they don't deserve to live? Love doesn't go away.
And we get a little bit of that. I mean, so many different characters have to respond to this crime, and it's fascinating how each of them do. I wanted you to read a small passage to give us a picture of Raina. This is early on in her life, and I think that it kind of paints a beautiful picture of her relationship with her mother and her brother. This, of course, is after the crime had already been committed, the father. So he was no longer in their lives. But I think this is a lovely scene. They're going to the beach, something that her mother loved doing. And, it's also interesting, too, because Carlito, her brother, has a very unique relationship to water because, of course, he was the child thrown over the bridge at the beginning. But if you could read this passage, it gives us this beautiful little idea of this family.
Our mother took to the beach like it was her temple. Finding a piece of shore far from the lifeguard stands, boom boxes, and smoky portable grills, spreading a blanket, smoothing the sand lumps underneath before lying down and shutting her eyes to the sun. She forced me, never Carlito, into the ocean with her, and I felt guilty leaving him behind on land. Mommy said the salty air purified the lungs and seawater nourished the skin. She'd pull me in by the hand, take me into her palms, dunk me under the surf like a baptism, and let me float in her arms. I let her because these were some of the few times I had my mother's full attention. "Listen to the water, Reina," she whispered, and I let myself be cushioned by the soft rush of waves. "If you trust the tide, it will always return you to shore." We didn't yet know about undertows and rip currents, the many ways the ocean can turn on you. Carlito hated getting wet and stayed away from the beach, kicking a soccer ball around on the concrete walkway toward the sea wall, down dusty trails through bendy pines, dodging the swarms of mosquitoes and spiderwebs that kept most people out of those paths. I was a faithful little sister, reluctant to go anywhere without him, so I'd always pull myself out of the water and away from Mommy, towel off, and follow my brother. Sometimes Carlito let me kick around with him, but most of the time he just wanted me to cheer him on while he battered the ball, shouting, "Go, Carlito! Viva Carlito!" And after he'd kick an imaginary goal, he'd do a little dance, and I'd scream so hard I'd almost make myself cry.
I'm speaking with Patricia Engel. She's the author of the book Veins of the Ocean. The story takes place here in South Florida and in Colombia and in Cuba, and it deals with the issues of family, tragedy, and incarceration. It's the October title in our Sundial Book Club. You can find us on Facebook. Look up our Facebook group and ask to join. We'd love to have you. Some time passes, and really the family kind of dissolves pretty much. And Reina has to escape, and she really has to go into sort of an exile. And she is an exile throughout the story. I mean, she's Colombian, but she's living in this country, and she's constantly, it seems, trying to find a sense of home. But first, I wanted to get an understanding. Why did you decide that she had to move to the Florida Keys?
Well, in a lot of ways, it's a book about displacement, right? It's about emotional exile, geographic exile. And Reina came to the United States as a baby. So she was, you know, one of those involuntary immigrants, right? Her parents brought her here, took her away from her birth country. So I wanted her to choose where she would live. And of course, at that moment, she wants to get away from everyone who knows her. And she's grown up in this very small South Florida community and kind of living in the public shame because of her brother being in the headlines. And then that is all brought about again with his death. So I knew that she would want to reinvent herself, or at least live life without reminders of everything she represents to other people, you know, as this kind of living representation of this horrible crime committed by her brother.
And in the Keys seems like that place where there's just a seclusion, a disconnect from
yes,
the rest of the world.
It is very close, but it's also a world away.
There she meets Nesto. How do you describe Nesto? Who is he?
Nesto was a very recently arrived Cuban exile. His is a family who did not leave with the revolution. They stayed, and they're the ones who have kind of had to endure all the failed promises of those who had faith in what the revolution could offer them. He is the father of two children. He's in a broken marriage, and he leaves very reluctantly and with a lot of conflict to come to the United States, hoping to be able to better provide for his family who are really suffering and enduring a lot of hardship back in Havana.
They both are exiles. They're both looking for a sense of home, but I get the idea. I mean, Nesto, he knows what home is. It's being with family. Not necessarily. He has this connection with Cuba. He misses it, but he also has a disillusion with Cuba. But home, it seems to me, is family. And she's trying to find an idea of home. She had that family, but what are they both looking for? How did they come together? Why are they such a good match?
Well, they come together in a sort of quiet friendship that turns into companionship because they're both very lonely people. They're both adrift. Nesto is looking just to provide for his family, and he sustains himself on the vision of being reunited with them, with being able to bring them over to join him in the United States. And of course, that's his struggle throughout the novel. Reina is really just trying to get through the day. She's just trying to understand what life is without being in the shadow of her brother, because she has spent the last 7 years of her life faithfully visiting her brother in prison. And her whole life has been dictated by that. She's been living almost her own prison sentence parallel to that. And her mother has essentially abandoned her, because her mother can't really deal with the pain of it all. And she's made a new life with a boyfriend up in Orlando. So they are both adrift. In that solitude, you know, they fall into that companionship with one another, and also with the natural world that surrounds them down there in the Keys.
As I mentioned before, Reina wants to find that sense of home. Part of it is to get back to Colombia. And she does go. Mm-hmm. She eventually goes back. And it seems like her response to it is, okay. And I've seen this before in people. Like, going back home, you have your memories of home, and it's never the same. Mm-hmm. It just you go back thinking you're going to return to something. Why is that?
Well, in Reina's case, her relationship to home is one of it's a bit of a mix of pain and nostalgia. And by the time she goes back there after her brother dies, because all her memories of being in Cartagena, where she's from, is being with her mother and her brother and her grandmother, never just on her own. By the time she goes back, she's fully on her own. Her mother has no interest in going back. Her brother's, of course, dead. And her grandmother is dead by that time, too. So she's totally alone there. And then it just becomes a place, you know.
She even goes back to their old home and walks through it. And just, it doesn't feel the same.
No, it's not the same. And of course, it's not the same. It's not the same because the people she loved are not there. It's empty. It's just a space. And because of that, she then makes the trip to go meet Nestor in Havana. And she sees that, of course, for him, home represents a very different reality, a very painful one. But he's also surrounded by love in a very different way there.
You have this beautiful imagery in the story where Nesto takes Reina out to sea, and they go very far out to go deep diving. And then we're talking about diving without equipment. They're just deep diving out in the blue sea. Have you had such an experience?
Yeah, I'm kind of a really intense researcher when I'm writing something. So just like I made trips to Cuba and to Cartagena in order to write my characters' homelands, I took up free diving in order to be able to better write the experience of what it is to, you know, throw yourself into the ocean with nothing but your own breath to sustain you. So I became a certified free diver. I studied that down here in South Florida. And it is definitely an experience like any other. I was a scuba diver before that, and it is completely, completely different.
So I think about the other aspects of the story, right? You have a time when she's working at an aquarium and dealing with dolphins. And then, of course, she's visiting her brother in the prison. You spend a lot of time researching aquariums? You spend a lot of time researching prisons?
Yes. Yeah. I've always been interested in just the American incarceration system, which is, you know, is so flawed in
prisons?
So many ways. I've been to prisons. Yeah. And I think also I moved to Florida 14 years ago and, from New York. And when I moved here, I was really impacted by how different the Florida incarceration system is compared to other states. And I was really shocked by how many executions happen here. And the death penalty is something people don't give much thought to. So I really wanted to get into that. You know, the United States is one of the few countries in the world where the death penalty is still practiced. For me, I consider it a barbarism. And countries that we consider, you know, to be violating human rights policies don't even do that. So I wanted to get into that. So I did some research, particularly in the families of the incarcerated, the families of people who are on death row. And I've been interested in captivity, the parallels between what we do to humans, what we do to animals, what we do to the natural world, all the ways that we exploit it and we undermine the rights of living creatures.
What do you want the reader to take away from this story? Or do you just leave it up to them?
Well, in everything that I write, I hope the reader comes from the experience of reading something that I've written, a story or a novel, feeling more compassionate and with a deeper understanding of the human experience, even if it's something that's very far from their reality and their own personal experience. I write a lot of flawed people and without judgment, and I hope that the reader then can kind of maybe take a step back and look at their own maybe prejudices and ways that they've overlooked certain people in our society.
Patricia Engel, author of the 2016 novel Veins of the Ocean, that is the October title for the Sundial Book Club. Patricia, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lewis.
And remember, you can find us on Facebook, look up the Sundial Book Club, ask to join, and you are welcome to join. We want as many of you as possible.